Good.
What version is that?
This is the ESV. Yes. And most of what I've done has been out of the ESV. But every once in a while I've had to flip-flop back and forth, and I've told you, hey, this is what this one says, but this is what this says, and this is what I believe why it says that. All right, so Deuteronomy 32. Give ear, O heavens, and I will speak, and let the earth hear the words of my mouth. May my teaching drop as rain, my speech distill as dew, like gentle rain upon the tender grass and like showers upon the herb. For I will proclaim the name of the Lord, ascribe greatness to our God, the rock. His work is perfect, for all his ways are justice, a God of faithfulness, without iniquity, just and upright is he. They have dealt corruptly with him. They are no longer his children because they are blemished. They are crooked and a twisted generation. Do you thus repay the Lord, you foolish and senseless people? He is not your father who created you, who made you, and who established you. So basically, just to cut this off for a second, God is divorcing mankind to an extent. Remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask your father, and he will show you, your elders, and they will tell you. When the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, when he divided mankind, he fixed the borders of the peoples according to the number of the sons of God. That is the crux of the argument. A lot of your versions, in verse 8, it says the sons of Israel. Remember, there is no Israel. At this point, this is basically the Tower of Babel when the nations were divided. So, as we have discussed many times, as this points out, until you are regenerated and born again, are you a son of God? Paul said, Jesus Christ gave you the ability to become a son or daughter of God. So, in your unregenerated state, you are not a son or daughter of God. You're not considered, I should say. You are a son or a daughter of who? Adam. We are all sons and daughters of Adam. Adam was a son of God. Everyone post-Adam was a son of Adam. But through the cross and through what Jesus did, you have the power to be reconciled back to God and therefore become a son and daughter of God. But as you can see, as this verse discussed, there is a point where God, he divorced Israel, if you'll remember that, and at this point he's divorcing all mankind. But verse 9 is another very important verse. But the Lord's portion is his people, Jacob his allotted heritage. So basically, I'll read it. And he found him in a desert land and in a howling waste of the wilderness. He encircled him. He cared for him. He kept him as the apple of his eye, like an eagle that stirs up a nest and flutters over its young, spreading out its wings, catching them, bearing them on its pinions. The Lord alone guided him. No foreign god was with him. So, what's basically, I believe, saying here, when God divided the nations, he basically said, okay, I told you what to do. I told you go out, subdue the earth, spread my kingdom. You're not going to do that. You won't listen to me. So basically, I am going to give you to these other beings. And they are going to supposedly, and this is where it gets into some crap, supposedly they were to bring you back to God. But at this point, God's saying, I divorced mankind other than one guy. And I'm going to start over with him. And he's going to be my people. You guys are not. Therefore, we have what? Gentiles and Jews. Right? This is the beginning of that.
Or Israel.
Or Israel.
Gentiles and Israel.
Right. Gentiles and Israel. So, and as you see, and in verse 12, it says, no foreign god was with him. And I know many people, we do not believe in a pantheistic deity. God is God. There is nobody like God. He has attributes that no other being has. He's one of a kind. But there are other beings created in the heavenlies that have what we would call Elohim. They live in that realm, and Paul described it. You have powers, princes, principalities. When he was laying that out, I believe he was describing a hierarchy among the unseen realm, the thing that we don't see. Just to give you, if I remember, I'm doing this from memory, so if you were to take an atom and blow it up to the point the nucleus was a BB, and you would put it on the goal line of a football field, the protons and electrons would rotate at the 5-yard line. So 99% of an atom is empty space, or unknown space, I should say. Right? So it's interesting. Everything that we know and touch is because of this table is 99% not here, more than the 1% is here. But because of the realm we live in, we perceive this.
I'm going to that chair.
I'll give you a quicker example.
Another preamble.
Your eyes see a certain fraction of the light spectrum. Of the spectrum. And if you were, some animals see way low in the light spectrum, some see way high, so they have a whole different view of the world. But you got, and when you study the human eye, it's just unbelievable, you got the perfect place where you have some night vision, but you can see during the day, and you just, God gave us that perfect thing for the world we live in, to give it, and that how our perception of reality is. We live in a subset of what's going on. And our perception is in this alley. And that's all we see. And I just wanted to set that stage because we're going to get introduced when I finally get to Daniel. So I want to introduce you to two bad guys. All right? Isaiah 14. Does anybody else want to read? All right. Thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how hath the oppressor ceased? The golden city ceased. The Lord broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He smote the people in wrath with continual stroke. He that ruled the nations in anger is persecuted as none is hindereth. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth in singing. Yea, fir trees rejoice at thee, and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since thou art laid down, no feller has come up against us. Hell from beneath us is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It has raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. All they that speak to thee shall say to thee, art thou also become weak as we? So it gives you a hint that all the kings of the earth believed that this being, which started out as the king of Babylon, was greater than them. Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy bowels, which is, I guess, kind of like a violin. The worm is spread under the tree, the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend to the heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, and I will be like the Most High. That is called Lucifer's five I will statements. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness, and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners, all the kings of the nation, even them lie in glory, everyone in his own house, but thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch, and is the remnant of those who are slain, thrust through with a sword, that go down to the stones of the pit, as a carcass trodden under feet. So basically what I'm getting at here, this started out as a prophecy against the king of Babylon. But a curtain is opened a little bit, and you're seeing who's really behind the king of Babylon is a greater entity. And how do you establish a thing? Two witnesses, right? Next. Well, I don't have to read that one. Ezekiel 28. And the word of the Lord came again to me. Son of man, say this to the prince of Tyrus. Thus saith the Lord God, because thy heart is lifted up, and thou hast said, I am God. I sit in the seat of God, in the midst of the seas, yet thou art a man, and not a God, though thou set thine heart as the heart of a God. Behold, thou art wiser than Daniel. There is no secret in they can hide from thee. With thy wisdom and with thy understanding, thou hast gotten thee riches, hast got gold and silver into thy treasuries. But thy great wisdom and by thy traffic hast thou increased thy riches, thy heart is lit up. Sorry. Therefore, thus said the Lord God, because thou hast said in thy heart, as the heart of God. Behold, therefore, I will bring strangers upon thee, the terrible of the nations, and they shall draw their swords against the beauty of thy wisdom, and they shall defile thy brightness. They shall bring thee down to the pit, and thou shalt die the deaths of them that are slain in the midst of the sea. Wilt thou yet set before him that slayeth thee, I am God, but thou shalt be a man and no God in the hand of him that slayeth thee. Thou shalt die the death of the uncircumcised by the hand of strangers, for I have spoken and said the Lord God. And it says, Son of man, take up the lamentation upon the king of Cyrus, say to him, thus said the Lord of God, thou sealest up the sun full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. So I've seen many pictures of the king of Tyre, but I don't know if he was perfectly beautiful, right? I kind of doubt it. And here, verse 13 gives you a really interesting thing. Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was thy covering, the sardis, topaz, and the diamonds, the beryl, the onyx, and the jasper, the sapphire, the emerald, the carbuncle, and the gold. The workmanship of thy tabrets and of thy pipes was prepared in thee the day that thou was created. The verse 13 kind of makes you believe, most people believe that Satan was the worship leader in heaven. And that's where that conjecture comes from when it says, thy pipes were prepared in thee from the day thou was created. Basically, your voice was. And thou art the anointed cherub that covereth. And I have set thee so thou wast upon the holy mountain of God. Thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Thou was perfect in thy ways from the day that thou was created till iniquity was found in thee. So does anybody in here believe that that was the human king of Tyre that started to be pointed at? No. What we did, we started out with him, but again, the curtain was cracked open, and you were able to see the being that was truly behind the power of the king of Tyre, which you also find, if you've been with me for these 2.5 years, however long we've been doing this, that the king of Tyre and Solomon were big buddies. So this just shows you how this kingdom has gone, well, the same way that Israel did, basically, right? So it started out as a good thing, and now it's, you know, I guess, I don't know how to measure. I don't know if there's like two little beings on the shoulder of every king. You know, there's like the good guy and the bad guy. You got to choose which one you're going to follow. And
the old cartoon.
Yeah, the old cartoon. Yeah, the devil. And the, so, but obviously, at some point, you know, beings convinced this the man started the, and we have this all throughout history with Egypt. They consider themselves a son of Isis and gods, and all these men consider themselves gods. So, but you can see here that, and I wanted, because we're going to get introduced to some characters, and that was why I kind of thought it was important to set the stage for that. But the multitude of thy merchandise, they have filled the midst of thee with violence, and thou hast sinned. Therefore I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of God, and I will destroy thee, O covering cherubim, in the midst of the stones of fire. Thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of brightness. I will cast thee to the ground, and I will lay thee before the kings, that they may behold thee. Thou hast defiled thy sanctuaries by multitude of thy iniquities, and by the iniquities of thy traffic. Therefore will I bring thee fire from the midst of thee, and I shall devour thee, and I will bring to thee ashes upon the earth in the sight of them that behold thee. All they that know thee among the people shall be astonished at thee. Thou shalt be a terror, and never shalt thou be more. So, an interesting character, and we could see. So you could go into, I swear we could spend 5 weeks, we could do, I think it's called angelology. So we know there's cherubs. We know there's, cherub is a singular form of cherubim. Cherubim is multiple. And many times in the Bible it talks about the cherubim. So obviously there's more than one of these. Then there's seraph, which is one. Then there's a seraphim, which is multiple. So those are the beings around the throne of God. We see the four faces on them, and they're the protectors of God's holiness. So I'm basically laying the groundwork that there is some sort of hierarchy that is in the realm that we are not privileged to see all the time. All right, so I introduced you to two bad guys. We'll look at one set of good guys. 2 Kings 6, and the king of Syria warred against Israel and took counsel of his servants, saying, in such and such a place will be my camp. And the man of God sent unto the king of Israel, saying, beware that thou pass not to a place, for there thinker the Syrians are come down. And the king of Israel sent to the place which the man of God told him, and warned him, and saved himself there not once or twice. So he's basically saying many times this happened. This is what was the two prophets that are named the same? Very close.
Elijah.
This is the second. Sorry, brain block up. And so he basically has the first spiritual wiretap, right? So he's going, whatever the king makes a plan, it's revealed to him. He calls the king of Israel, or gets a hold of, I guess he didn't call him back in that day, and just sends him a text and says, hey, don't go to X and X a place. The Syrians are waiting for you there. So verse 11, therefore the heart of the king of Syria was sore trouble for this thing. And he called his servants and said to them, will ye not show me which one of us is for the king of Israel? He's basically saying, is there anybody here that's a spy? Does anybody know of anybody that's a spy? And one of his servants said, none, my lord, but it's Elijah, the prophet that is in Israel. Tell us, the king of Israel, all the words that thou speakest in thy bedchamber. And he said, go and spy where he is, that I may send and fetch him. And he was told, saying, behold, he is in Dothan. Therefore he sent hither horses and chariots and a great host, and they came by night and compassed the city about. So when the servant of the man of God was risen early, I guess that was his job to get up and get the water in the morning and all that stuff going, and gone forth, behold, a host compassed the city, which it says city, but it's basically what we consider a village, both with horses and chariots. And its servant said unto him, alas, my master, how shall we do? Basically, what are we going to do? They have us. And Elijah answered, and he answered, fear not, for they that be with us are more than be with them. And Elijah prayed and said to the Lord, it's kind of funny, you don't know if he like had an exasperated, like, Lord, open his eyes. And he prayed and said, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man. And that's an interesting term, open the eyes. And there's many times in the Bible, we'll see, lift up your eyes. We open our eyes.
And he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire around Elijah. And when he came down to him, Elijah prayed unto the Lord and said, Smite this people, I pray thee, with blindness. And he smote them with blindness according to the word of Elijah. So I can go on with the story. But I wanted to give you, so we saw two bad guys in the realm that we don't live in. Now we're seeing a host that lives in that realm, and they're all good guys, and they're on our side, you know? So I just think that's a very comforting compared to the other stuff when you realize, is there a being that is the ruler of the United States of America? Is there a I don't want to say demonic, but a being intent on evil?
How about Elohim?
Yeah, there you go.
A watcher.
A watcher. That's over the United States. That's right. Over Britain. That's over France. That's, I don't know. But we're making a case for that. All right, that's what? Daniel 10. We got 10 minutes. Nah, we're good. In the third year of Cyrus, before I go in there, does anybody have, I know that was kind of a long way around, but I had to set the stage for some of the people you're about to meet. Anybody?
The only thing you have when Jesus was born, the heavens were open and the shepherds saw the angels.
The host.
The host of heaven. It's another.
So it's kind of interesting. I mean, you can go in this, not to get too far off in the weeds with the angelology thing, but I mean, the Bible says you'll host them and not even know it. You know, and then you have the thing with Amor. They ate, right? They had bodies. They went into Sodom. They walked into Sodom. But yet, one of them killed 180-some thousand Syrians one night. One guy. One being. One Elohim. Right? So, they're not to be trifled with. And it's kind of interesting, we know, I know you can get into the Apocrypha and you can go into all kinds of things, but basically we know two, which are Gabriel and Michael. And Michael seems to be a warrior, and we're going to get introduced to them. And we've met Gabriel in this book, and Gabriel is always bringing messages from God. If you remember who appeared to Mary and told her she was going to be the mother of the Son of God, it was Gabriel. He's always bringing messages. So, and then Michael's always seen in battle. And we even see him in the weird verse in Jude where he's fighting over Moses' body. So, again, I just find it fascinating just to find weird parts in the Bible. That's my little proclivity. Sorry if I've dragged you through a something with me. All right, Daniel 10. In the third year to Cyrus, king of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel. So let's stop there. So in the first year of king of Cyrus of Persia, what happened? Anybody? He said, go home, right? He gave, first year he gave money, gave him stuff, said, go back, build the temple, right? So this reveals to you that Daniel did not go with him. A, there's a lot of speculation just to go through that A, he's in his 80s now, and he might not have wanted to physically make that trip. B, he could have stayed back behind in case they needed something more from Cyrus that maybe he felt he could help out with. But basically, Daniel is now retired. You're going to find out he's not even in Babylon anymore. So, a message was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belshazzar. And the message was true and one of the great conflicts, but he understood the message and had an understanding of the vision. So again, remember, we had a portion of the book in the beginning that started in Hebrew. Then we went to Aramaic through verse chapter 7 because it was all about Gentile history. Now we're back to Hebrew. So in those days, I, Daniel, have been mourning for 3 entire weeks. I did not eat any tasty food, nor did meat or wine enter my mouth, nor did I use any ointment at all until the entire 3 weeks were completed. So, obviously, he's fasting, but in a certain, doesn't say he didn't eat any food, he just didn't eat anything tasty. So, and it's kind of funny because you read all the other times that things were revealed to him, he was like having trouble at work because he was so troubled by what he's seen. So now, he's going to get a real view into the future when he doesn't have to go to work. So, And on the 24th day of the first month, while I was at the bank of the great river, that is the Tigris. So if you remember, Babylon's on the Euphrates. So now he's in his vacation villa, his retirement home in Florida, if you will. And I lifted my eyes, again, there's the term, and looked, and behold, there was a certain man dressed in linen, whose waist was girded with a belt of pure gold or uphaz. His body was also like beryl. His face had the appearance of lightning. His eyes were like flaming torches. His arms and his feet, the gleam of polished bronze, and the sound of his words were like the sound of turmoil. So that had to be. So now I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, while the men who were with me did not see the vision. Nevertheless, a great dread fell upon them, and they ran away and hid themselves. So you could kind of almost picture like Paul's Damascus Road kind of thing, but in Damascus, I believe they saw it, but they couldn't hear what was being said. And here it looks like they just did the runaway thing. So I was left alone and saw this great vision, yet no strength was left in me, for my natural color turned to a deathly pallor, and I retained no strength. So it actually, you know, we thought, well, like you saw a ghost, it would be our vernacular. Then behold, and I heard the sound of his words, and as soon as I heard the sounds of his words, I fell into a deep sleep on my face, with my face to the ground. Then behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. And he said to me, O Daniel, man of high esteem. And there's one thing I guess I could have changed. It would say, O Daniel, man greatly beloved. And who is the other beloved person in the Bible? John, right? So what happened when John was in retirement on Patmos? Huh? Same kind of thing. Same pattern. O Daniel, man of high esteem, understand the words that I'm about to tell you and to stand upright. For I have now been sent to you, and when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling. What's kind of funny, because he says that, I tell you and stand upright. So he basically gave him a command, right? So it just tells you that he's like, even Paul said we're a little lower than the angels. So the angel tells him, hey, stand up, I got something to tell you. And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling. Then he said to me, do not be afraid, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart on understanding this and on humbling yourself before your gods, your words were heard, and I have come in response to your word. But here it gets interesting. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days. Then behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left there with the king of Persia. So that is why I went through that whole little thing to try to establish that there is this hierarchy, and it seems to be, you can make a case, that there are rulers over geographic regions of the earth. And again, is there a Elohim for the United States? Is there
rulers or watchers?
Watchers, I would say. I should say, but he calls them princes,
right,
which are kind of. I guess they have some.
They were supposed to watch, and they
right? Then they got involved,
right?
Yeah.
Involved watchers. There you go.
So it's funny. I actually cut out before I went back and did the whole thing. I cut out and stuck in here. It says, "Remember the days of old. Consider this is in Deuteronomy 8:7." Remember the days of old, consider the generations long past. Ask your fathers, and they would tell you, your elders, and they would explain to you. When the Most High gave the nations their inheritance, he divided up all mankind. He set the boundaries for the people according to the number of the sons of God. For the Lord's portion is his people, Jacob, his allotted inheritance. So there, it's basically saying God gave all the Gentile nations somebody else to come between them and him. And speculation is that their job was to reconcile the people back to God. But they rebelled, just like the earth.
think, hey, so Chris, it's important to note, I think, that a lot of the versions say sons of Israel. I know you kind of touched on that before, but the reality is that Israel didn't exist yet, so it's kind of hard to divide them up among the sons of Israel when Israel wasn't yet created.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Bye. Thank you. Now I have come to give you an understanding of what will happen to your people in the latter days, for the vision pertains to the days yet future. So here we go. When he had spoken to me according to these words, I turned my face towards the ground and became speechless. And behold, one who resembled a human being was touching my lips, and I opened my mouth and spoke and said to him who was standing before me, O my Lord, as a result of the vision, anguish has come upon me, and I have retained no strength. For how can such a servant of my Lord talk with such as my Lord? As for me, there remains just no strength in me, nor has any breath been left in me. So this gets into, I have to bring up another point of view. Some people believe this is a Christophany, because of how Daniel talks to this being. But I don't believe Jesus Christ would need help from anybody to deal with the beings that he's created. The Bible says through Jesus Christ, all things were created. Without him, there wasn't anything. So all of the beings, so I don't believe this is a Christophany, but there's people that do, and I just thought I would bring it up in case you. But again, I don't believe Jesus needs help from anybody to deal with anything. Then this one with human appearance touched me again and strengthened me. And he said, O man of high esteem, O beloved, do not be afraid. Peace be with you. Take courage and be courageous. Now, as soon as he spoke to me, I received strength and said, May my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me. So there are a great example of words of encouragement and how much words can mean to somebody. Then he said, Do you understand why I came to you? But I shall now return to fight against the prince of Persia. So I am going forth, and behold, the prince of Greece is about to come. Anybody find that interesting? There is no Greek kingdom at this time. We're still in the Medo-Persians. So Greeks are just a bunch of city-states. If you know anything about Greek history, they didn't form until under Alexander did they form into kind of a united. And even Alexander's army was mostly not Corinth. It doesn't matter. Most of his army was from one city. They were all his relatives when it started, and then it blossomed to, you know, a couple hundred thousand. So it's interesting that we're introduced to all these people. The Prince of Persia and the Prince of Greece is about to come, and there is no Greek Empire at this time. However, I will tell you what is inscribed in the writing of truth. Yet there is no one who stands firmly with me against these forces except Michael, your prince. So every time we're introduced to Michael in the Bible, he is always fighting for Israel. That seems to be his, and you can make some speculation that that's why he was fighting over Moses' body. So I have this fun little thing. So what do you turn to when you die? What does the Bible say you return to? Dust. What was the curse of the serpent in Genesis? To crawl on the ground and eat the dust. So I believe that's why Satan had Moses' body. God said, okay, you want these people? When they die, you have to deal with the remains. And for us, he stuck dealing with the remains of saved people. Our spirits are already with God. He just gets the shell, the leftover, the rotting dead, if you will. He has to deal with it. And I just find that interesting. So, that was today's weirdness with Chris. So,
Anybody have any comments that I really spin people off into the ether or whatever? Feel free to add. It's just not supposed
We're
to be.
We're just holding on to our chairs and tables.
Well, you usually do that on a Saturday night anyway, right?
Did I blank in the King's Park as you talk about the school down and